Welcome to Tech Hygiene, the show about staying clean in a dirty tech world, with your hosts, John Biggs and Lauren Feldman.
Welcome back to Tech Hygiene. I'm John Biggs.
I'm Lauren Feldman.
And welcome to this is our little private clubhouse sort of app sort of system that we've built here. It's from our voices to your ears, and we're only going to talk dirt on people that we don't like.
Right, but the best part, our security is better than theirs.
Because, yeah, completely.
Because nobody knows who's listening. Nobody knows if you're listening to us.
And not enough people are listening yet that it matters. So ultimately, we're talking to a void. So I mean, I think ultimately that's kind of what Gen X has created. We've created the opportunity for millions of people to talk to nobody at the same time.
Well, the plus side is at least we have them not talking to themselves.
Yeah. Actually, yeah, that's true. So yeah, at least that's one of the interesting things. I mean, you would think that a lot of pathologies would kind of go away because people can just kind of babble to the world, whereas they're not doing it like at the bus stop anymore.
Right. That's, I guess, a good or a bad depending on how you're looking at it. But
yeah. Anyway, we want to talk about Quibi today. I know that you're a huge fan. You've been you were there from the beginning, right?
Yes, I downloaded Quibi the minute that it was available. I followed Quibi. No, I'm being dead serious.
You really?
Yeah. I'm in the entertainment business, kind of. So mm-hmm. I followed Quibi from the minute the company was actually thought of, from that point. When it was finally released, I downloaded it, signed up for my free 30 days, watched 15 seconds of the Christy Teigen show, mm-hmm. watched like 8 seconds of a pasta show. Mm-hmm. One other show for about probably 2 seconds that I can't remember. And then the next thing I did after that was I immediately deleted my free 30 days. So what is that? About 19 seconds in total.
Well, it's supposed to be quick bites. It's supposed to be all about the quick bites.
Well, the whole customer life cycle was 19 seconds with me. I'm not even kidding. I wish I was kidding, Bigsy. I'm not. 19 seconds after I got it.
This is an interesting point. So Quibi was supposed to be the quick bites video thing, and you're supposed to be able to turn your phone and see video on like different ways. And I first heard of this thing, and it was Meg Whitman and Katzenberg, and they raised $1.76 billion for this thing. You could literally either buy like a aircraft carrier for that money, or you could give everybody healthcare in the U.S. just so they could build out this awful thing. And the first I had ever heard of it, because I had been out of startups for a while, the first I ever heard of it was this woman who was in TV. Like terrestrial, like she worked at Fox News, and she was just enamored by this idea. And she was like, oh guys, these guys are going to really nail the online video world. And I'm like, who is it? Like Meg Whitman? She destroyed HP, and she kind of did okay over at eBay and Katzenberg. I mean, what did he do? He did a little DreamWorks for a while, but he was also fired multiple times for just being a freak show. And for me, it looked like an absolute mess. It looked like it wasn't going to work.
I knew it was going to fail from day one, and not because of a personnel problem so much. Ms. Whitman definitely ill-placed there. She recently came out and said she's not really even an entertainment fan, and her mm-hmm. favorite show on TV was about President Grant or something.
Yeah.
So that's a disaster. Katzenberg, I think you're being a little too harsh on. Definitely a visionary guy, you know, billionaire, DreamWorks, SKG, personally kind of responsible for the whole resurgence of animation. So I'm not going to be as harsh on him as you. I knew that it was going to be a failure from the minute that it was going to be big stars and overly produced, and I didn't care. The whole turnstile, I think it's called technology. It worked. Don't care. Who cares? You know, I mean, ultimately, not that different than YouTube. It just changes the perspective a little bit. not a game changer. And I knew the budget at Quibi was basically $100,000 a minute.
Yeah, and it was budgeted primarily for the talent. That's why they raised it, right?
They all for content. They had to do these giant, ridiculous deals with the talent, and they got everyone. I don't know off the top of my head, but definitely A-list actors and actresses, and then they mixed in the Chrissy Teigens mm-hmm. and people with giant Twitter social media followings. Seemed to be a strategy, which was ironic considering the first iteration of the software didn't let you share any of that. It was disastrous from the start. TikTok, nobody cares. We had this discussion the other day kind of mm-hmm. about the web and TV, and it's the same kind of thing. I don't care about any of these stars on the web. I care about them in a movie or their mm-hmm. TV show. So overbetting like on big names and big production, nobody cares. Somebody wants to see some idiot kid or parent or whoever dance on TikTok, and that's fine.
But this is what I want to try to understand. You come from a more like let's say showbiz.
Absolutely.
Showbiz standpoint. You come from a showbiz and Hollywood, more Hollywood oriented view.
Yes.
You're always technological, but I think you've got a little bit of the.
I've made a few films.
Yes.
I'm in SAG. I've been in the film business. Yes.
So help me understand why should I, as a technologist, trust like a Katzenberg to build this out for me? Yeah, God bless him. He made Shrek. He made some whatever, Kung Fu Panda, and he brought back whatever, Aladdin, and also other good stuff. And that's great art. It's the best thing. But he also sounds like a nightmare to work with. And he has no understanding or even a reverence for the online medium.
Well,
so it's like somebody told him there's a smaller TV and here's how to record video for it. So just go for it.
You're 100% correct. I agree. Artists love him because he throws a ton of cash at them. And the way these deals, according to the Hollywood Reporter and more entertainment oriented news, mm-hmm. they're throwing crazy money and getting scripts and ideas that already have been passed on by Netflix and Amazon and studios and Apple TV, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he does that. What is that called? The blacklist or whatever it's called, where it's like that.
Yeah, those are the best scripts that aren't produced, kind of thing. But it's not even that. It's worse than that. So, and additionally, what's interesting is that the artist maintains copyright. And it's basically just a license, which is very interesting. So it's not even like Quibi is building this library and they own the shows, which is, you know, way crazy considering his background.
Mm-hmm.
So they're on their way out of business. They don't want to admit it. The shows are just, they're so unwatchable and parody, and the fact that they are overly produced like that makes them like Saturday Night Live, you know, fake commercials, you know, or a Saturday Night Live digital short in a way. Mm-hmm. That was really my impression.
I mean, and again, there's something to be said for like, if I could watch a really good Lonely Island clip, but I mean, look, I wouldn't pay $4.99 for that. Nobody pays a penny for that.
Correct. Correct. It's crazy. It'll go down as one of the biggest failures ever, for sure.
Yeah, but it's
and they're
really
still spending money. I read like... every day. I read every day. They're still spending money like crazy and signing big time people. And the talent is laughing their asses off, and God bless them, artist to artist. I love it. But at the end of the day, it's, as you said, probably better use for close to $2 billion other than this nonsense.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So you could get maybe be like, whatever. But I mean, I don't, the, all of the misplaced hopes of folks who don't understand tech was really frustrating to me, because it's kind of like, it's a, or even online media, it's really frustrating. And it's like, they trusted him. It was a Theranos kind of situation. They trusted him because they didn't quite understand what was going to happen. And they just saw, they saw confidence versus actual content.
Right. Well, content is always king. Distribution, I guess, is queen. And all of these companies are, you know, going to figure it out. It's really tough. But that kind of leads us into another deal in the content space.
Yeah.
Stitcher. So
this just popped up today. This just popped up on Monday. Stitcher bought, or SiriusXM bought Stitcher.
Yeah, $325 million.
Which isn't that much, quite honestly.
Why, you think it should have been more?
What was the Spotify purchase when they did the Spotify's been buying up a bunch of podcasts.
Well, they just got Rogan in their big deal. They gave Rogan by himself $100 million.
Yeah, Michelle Obama. Yeah, $100 million for Rogan.
Just for Rogan. So yeah. Stitcher brings with them some cool ad technology, and mm-hmm. they also bring Marc Maron. They bring Conan. They bring a couple of A-list kind of podcasts. Mm-hmm. But do you think that podcast is real this time? We like to call ourselves old men. I mean, I was in the podcast business with John Furrier and PodTech mm-hmm. a long time ago, and we thought it was going to take off. It didn't, and here we are again, 10-15 years later.
So tell me about that experience. Tell me about that those early days with John Furrier and those things. Tell me what that time looked like.
John Furrier was a genius, to tell you the truth. John Furrier, who now runs SiliconANGLE and has an audio video company, The Cube, I think it's called. He was a visionary, and he started a company called PodTech, and it was podcasts and videos. Mm-hmm. And he signed myself. He signed Robert Scoble. He signed Jay Smooth, I believe, mm-hmm. back in those days. A couple of other, you know, early kind of content podcast video guys. And he was just too early. And he also had internal problems. Gilmore. Mm-hmm. Steve Gilmore. And it became a bit of a disaster. And, you know, the thing fell apart. But it was funny because me and Scoble hated each other in the, you know, still do, yeah. Definitely on my end. I'm sure he mm-hmm. still hates me. It was like just a vicious kind of vibe with me and him. Hmm. But I'm a team player, and I definitely didn't care working at the same company. And we even did like cross promotional kind of shit.
Yeah.
And I remember John was like, you know, I got Imus and I got Stern. Mm-hmm. He knew what he was doing, and he understood attention and what audio and all of that. And it kind of just imploded. And beyond Furrier, there were other early people. I remember more of the video guys, but mm-hmm. I mean, there were a few guys banging on audio early. And for Furrier through PodTech understood it. So
what do you think? So this is an interesting question. So you were there in the beginning. You were there like the in the room where it happened, as it were. And now we have a new renaissance of podcasting, which, I mean, you and I are part of. We get a kick out of it, right? We get a kick out of just the ability to babble to a freaking microphone. Makes us feel good. But apparently it's a huge deal. I know plenty of people who listen to tech podcasts. They listen to all kinds of podcasts. My wife actually gives herself a little treat, and she sits there and listens to podcasts like as she's puttering around the house. That's what she does. We don't listen to terrestrial radio. Definitely. We don't really listen to music per se, unless I like tell Alexa to just play like a playlist or something like that. But the podcast thing is an active thing that people are still searching for and actively trying to listen to. Does it have enough legs to become a massive business? Maybe it already is a massive business and we just don't want to accept it. I don't know.
Well, it sounds like it's a massive business in terms of these dollar figures. Mm-hmm. Funny enough, being in the business and all of that, I've never been a big consumer of podcasts. I'm more mm-hmm. of a music guy. I mean, basically, the only time I listen to audio is at night when I'm in bed. Mm-hmm. I put on headphones and I put on a playlist. That being said, as you just said, lots of people like podcasts. For me, as you said, being there from the beginning, I'm curious if it will stick this time. And I guess a lot of it has to do with devices, maybe. I mean, back in the old days, I don't even think they had iPhones with the ability to play audio in the background, honest.
You didn't. So you weren't listening. Like, I remember I tried to do a podcast. Oh gosh. When I first came back to the States in like 2001, I did a podcast with my buddy. And back then a podcast was like us like recording each other's sides. We mixed it together in Acid, which was like a sound editor. And we posted it and it was like 30 megs. And people had to download it over these goofy dial-up connections. We actually had people complaining that, like, oh my God, I downloaded this whole thing, and all it was these guys talking about, I don't know, folk music. And it was really funny. But you didn't have this whole thing where it wasn't really a podcast per se. It was just a site that just had links to sound files.
Yeah.
That's the best you had.
Yeah. Furrier at Podtech even had a proprietary player for video back in those days.
Yeah, that's yep. nice.
And audio. Yeah, he was a smart guy. He still is mm-hmm. a smart guy. But yeah, the technology, I think, is part of this explosion and just background play. I think with audio, see, it's interesting because we just spoke about video. I think audio mm-hmm. is inverse, where I know it's true in movies. For example, if you go to a movie and the visual sucks, you'll kind of deal with it. If there's an audio problem, mm-hmm. you immediately freak out.
Yeah.
So with audio, I think you want to try and get the best production possible, because you are in somebody's headphones, maybe, or in their car. It's more intimate. Mm-hmm. So I think the professionalism rise of podcasts in terms of production could also be part of it.
All right, we got a last topic. We got physical books. So Mary Trump, Donald Trump's niece, did a really good job with her book. I think they did their record-breaking sales over at Simon & Schuster. Not to get into politics, the book's pretty good. It's if you want to hear about the growth of a young man into a sociopath. But the fact is that she sold how many copies of the hardback?
Over a million.
Let me check here.
I think it's a little.
Mary Trump's book breaks with mammoth sales. It's insane. So 950,000 copies by the end of the first day on sale. Simon Schuster said Thursday. That's pre-sales as well as ebooks and audiobooks is a new record for Simon & Schuster. And it looks like John Bolton's book sold 780,000 copies. So the question is here, first, do we care about these kinds of blips in an industry that's essentially either being eaten up by free blog content or generally just not working anymore? Or is this the normal? Does this still happen over the next couple of years?
Well, I think the fact that it's about Trump and so pertinent and all of that obviously is a big deal. But generally, I like that physical books are being sold. I don't care mm-hmm. what they are. I like that there's still a demand for that. And
Why do you like the physical book?
Because it gets people away from the screen. I think it's ultimately, if you're a reader, mm-hmm. it's a better experience. I think a book is better than a Kindle. I don't mind putting a bookmark in a book, you know?
Well, you know, I agree. I agree. So I actually buy books for the kids. So I want them to have the physical book so they can basically, instead of having this list of files on a Kindle, I want them to go into the front room, look at all the books that I have and pick one.
Right.
Which hasn't yet happened, but here's hoping. But I think it's so hard to justify the purchase of a physical object when you don't know what's going to be inside. That's one of the biggest problems with my biggest problems with physical books right now.
What do you mean? You don't know if it's going to be a good book or not?
Do you need a physical thing when you can just spend $10.99 or whatever? And I'm more than willing to spend $10.99 on an ebook. I buy so many books that it's almost criminal. I think I have like 1,100 books available on my Kindle right now. But the trick there is I'll buy it and I'll leave it on the Kindle. And if I want to read it and I get into it, I'll read it. But if I buy a physical book, I have a physical object in my house that just gets more and more cluttered. And I either have to give it up, put it in the little library next door, or I don't know, never read it, which is even more criminal.
Well, I don't know. I just think there's something. I mean, 1,100 books mm-hmm. is a lot. How many are you reading? I mean, do you constantly read?
Yeah, I read a lot. So. I read a lot. So I'll read. I try to read like about a book a week if I can. And I do that. I do my reading newsletter. So I try to read. That ends up to about 3 or 4 books a month, and a lot of them I don't. A lot of them I don't read. Like I'll get a book and I don't finish it on the Kindle specifically. But
see, I read everything mm-hmm. on the web. My sister, who is an insane, voracious reader, is a physical mm-hmm. book girl. And she'll have like three books okay. on the night table.
I have 50 and books. I have 50 books.
It's funny because
my wife bought me a new end table for my books.
Right. So you are into physical books.
I love the concept. I love the concept, but I just don't want to. I don't want to have them. It drives me nuts. Yeah.
Right. Well, it sounds like you have a recycling problem more than anything.
I got to figure out where to put them.
But I think it's good, the physicality of books. I think that's an overall trend that you're going to see. It's kind of like, I don't want to say arts and crafts, but even with like electronics, mm-hmm. I just bought this new recorder, little Zoom mm-hmm. H1N. No, it wasn't a sponsored spot, but it's a little thing. And it has knobs and dials as opposed to everything being mm-hmm. screen-based, touchscreen-based and stuff. And I don't know. I just like physical world kind of stuff. I mean, it's a little different, but the same kind of psychology behind it.
So I think in terms of how we should think about this, especially from our podcast standpoint, is that that sort of physical interaction with books or with systems, like again, like all my audio stuff has knobs and dials. I have buttons everywhere. I have a box in front of me that allows me to control the headphones and stuff. And that's actually better. That's superior because it's an instant gratification as opposed to this box in front of me is never going to crash. Right.
And it's also much more pleasing and intuitive.
Well, I mean, I have audio gear in front of me. If you don't know what these dials mean, you can make things that sound awful pretty easily.
I know, of course. But once you know, just, you know, turning the little knob
goes, yeah, makes it higher and lower.
So, I mean, they still do it in recording studios. I mean, it's all software based, but the guy's still got a giant physical board in front of him moving sliders, right? So it's the same kind of thing.
All right. Well, so I would agree with you that the physical book is going to survive. I'm not sure how long. And it's also pretty interesting that you can still get $1 million single day or million copy single days in this economy of all things.
Well, regardless of subject matter, it's just nice to see people reading long form.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. No, it's like, especially given our tech hygiene idea, the fact that one of the problems with tech hygiene is that we can't read long form anymore because our attention spans are shot.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm in, whether it's Trump, whether it's Biden, whether it's anything pretty much, other than Nazi propaganda, maybe, I'm into people reading anything long form.
This has been Tech Hygiene with John Biggs and Lauren Feldman. You can tweet me at John Biggs. Lauren doesn't want to be tweeted. We're setting up a website for this and all this other good stuff. And we're glad you joined us for episode number dose of this whole operation here.